The Knicks filed a protest with the league, and we wonder, will this one actually work? The Warriors and Sixers and all these other sharks are circling the LeBron waters, and we give you some thoughts on All-Star Weekend. That and more coming up right now on this episode of No Cap Room. Hello, friends. Welcome to No Cap Room. My name is Jake Fisher, senior NBA reporter at Yahoo Sports. And joining me, as always, senior NBA writer at Yahoo Sports, it's my man, it's your man, it's everyone's man, it's Dan Devine. What is up?
Jake, we're coming to you a little bit early on this Thursday morning because I believe that you have some stuff to do. I, as always, have nothing to do. I'm just like posted up here, kids, and that's it. But you are a hard traveling hero. What do we got going on? Where are we heading?
I'm starting my All-Star break by taking a day slash night trip to Atlantic City with an unnamed NBA friend and other friends to go to a mutual favorite restaurant called Chef Ola's. Shout out Chef Ola's. And they're going to attempt to break me out of my, I guess, 3-year gambling retirement, as they always do.
Oh, okay.
So we'll see what happens. Yeah. What do you don't have anything going this weekend? No fun plans?
I mentioned this earlier in the week. The All-Star break is also like my kids' midwinter break from school. So I am like DNP family on all of the Indianapolis stuff. Like I will be going out of town to visit a friend, but I won't be in for any of the All-Star stuff. So we'll have to talk about it doubly hard today so that we're both going to be missing it.
Yeah. I plan to be at All-Star 2025 in San Francisco. I'm not making it this weekend to Indianapolis. No shots at Indianapolis. I'm done with the NBA for a little. We're going to record this podcast. I'm not going to think about ball again for at least 72 hours. It will be a nice reprieve for myself.
We got to get the thinking about ball energy up though for the next hour. We got to make sure that we're here.
I got plenty of stuff. We got highlighted notes. We got rundowns.
We got to run through the tape. We got to sprint through the tape on this one.
Let's do it. I mean, today we're going to talk a lot of Warriors and a lot of LeBron. So clearly, we are playing the hits today on No Cap Room. We hope the NC Armada is ready to set sail. Because before we get to that, some news. The Knicks are filing a protest with the league after a controversial foul call at Houston. And I never looked into the intricacies of what it takes to have a protest be overturned. Usually when it happens, when a protest happens, it's like, oh, cute little team trying to raise your argument, and we know nothing's ever going to happen. This one, though, according to our friend Fred Katz of The Athletic, this one kind of seems like it has an opportunity. And the most funny detail, though, of all this is learning that the last time this happened, the last time the game was overturned, was in 2007 between the Magic and the Miami Heat when Shaquille O'Neal fouled out. But then when they finally did redo the game, he was already traded. So he wasn't even there to redo the game. So hopefully the Knicks, in their quest for justice, they have the unit that they're hoping for to rematch the mighty Houston Rockets.
So two things about it. One, it was the Hawks back in 2007, not the Magic.
Sorry.
It was Southeast Division, rivalries run hot. I understand we can get confused. But I have had the pleasure over the years of writing about a handful of protests here at Yahoo Sports because they don't happen often, but they have happened, a handful of them over the last decade or so. As you mentioned, not one upheld since 2007, which was the first time in all of David Stern's tenure that one was upheld. And that began in 1984, I think. So like one getting upheld, pretty rare. And the thing to know about this is even when if the league admits something bad happened, like if the league says we made a mistake or the referee says we made a mistake, as happened, crew chief Ed Malloy, as you mentioned in a pool report with Fred Katz, The Athletic, said that Jalen Brunson should not have been called for a foul on that last second shot by Aaron Holiday. Even when there is an admission of like, this was a mistake, it's
guilt.
Not,
that doesn't. Ed Malloy is guilty. That's what happened. He has been put on the stand and the jury has declared Ed Malloy wrong.
But he also, This is a mea culpa. He's admitting it, that he and Jason Goble and the crew over there got that one wrong. But it's not about just like did a mistake happen? Did a wrong call get made? Was a rule misapplied? That's the standard the NBA has because they consider it like an extreme measure to replay, a minute or 5 minutes or whatever, to take a win or a loss off the books and redo it, especially in a situation where they don't play again this season. So they would have to like find an open date on the calendar and get them together to play overtime, which would be kind of wild. So I think the odds are pretty slim, but the Knicks have been going through it the last couple of weeks. So I guess any opportunity to try to eke out a win, even if it's in the legal system, why not?
The Charlotte Hornets are going to have a new general manager after Mitch Kupchak and the Hornets announced that he is stepping down from his lead post running the basketball operations of Michael Jordan's former team, now being owned and operated by a joint partnership of Rick Schnall and Gabe Plotkin, two former minority owners of the Atlanta Hawks. And this was something that the whole league was prepared for. I believe at the time of his new deal at Bleacher Report, I wrote that Kupchak's deal was known around front office circles to be a 2-year contract with like many year options after the first two to be a senior advisor in quotes, which who knows what exactly that will entail, as that I think is the case in any time teams mutually agree to part ways, and like Dwayne Casey's just hanging out in the Pistons front office right now.
We should ask Dwayne what that means when you get kicked upstairs. What do you actually do?
Yeah, I do know Alvin Gentry, after being mutually agreed to going into the front office in Sacramento, is living kind of a sweet advanced pro scout life, just flying around the country, telling stories, logging player personnel intel. So maybe there will be opportunity for Mitch Kupchak to be just like one of the boys in the front office, but I don't know. Not too many septuagenarian pro scouts these days. Shout out. Is it Billy Burka is the guy's name in the Lakers?
Yep.
So what I wanted to just highlight is that there are going to be a ton of names that do come out for this job. A lot of them, I just want to issue a public service warning to the NBA slap fans out there. A lot of the names you're going to hear are going to be names that either Charlotte wants to be involved or people who want themselves to be involved that aren't going to be involved. So the first batch that came out on ESPN's reporting, as Keith Pompey at the Inquirer already stated, and I had been told that a little while ago, but shout out to Keith because I did not bring the information to the people, that Elton Brand, the general manager in Philly, number two behind the president, Daryl Morey, has no interest in that position. Although I do believe he's someone that definitely is on the radar in Charlotte. And he has been, he was on the radar in Minnesota before they ended up with Tim Connelly. So that's just one example so far of the early batch of names where it does seem like Trajan Langdon and Jeff Peterson are two names that have been in the rumor mill about this exact position for a long time, pretty much ever since the ownership changeover took place, where Trajan is the GM of the New Orleans Pelicans, the number two there. He left there from being the number two in Brooklyn under Sean Marks, but to a GM title. Jeff Peterson is an assistant general manager in Brooklyn. Two very, very highly regarded guys. Trajan played at Duke, has other ties to the organization, was a finalist for the Wizards job that went to Michael Winger. Those two guys, as well as the Cleveland Cavaliers general manager Mike Gansey, all prominent names in our Next GM's article that ran at Yahoo Sports at the end of last summer. So if you guys want more idea of who these next back, if you're really interested, if you're a real sicko and care about who's going to be the next up and coming front office leaders around the NBA coming to an organization near you, check out that article. And it's going to be interesting to see who they do hire. But to me also when it happens, because it does sound like the goal is to get someone in here before the season's over and kind of really hit the ground running. And that will be, I think, an advantage that Charlotte has over several other teams that are going to have changes, because that just is how the NBA works. There are going to be changes. But this year in particular, it feels, and not to be the Grim Reaper over cushy NBA jobs, but it does seem like there's plenty of teams that have lofty expectations this season, and only 8 of them can get to the second round. So there's a lot of potential for hurt feelings and sour grapes and sour tastes in one's mouths as they walk off the hardwood of some arena to cheers or boos or whatever, to all of a sudden we have a Mike Budenholzer Milwaukee situation. So I think that's just something to keep in mind as we move forward throughout the rest of this NBA campaign, once we come back from All-Star, once we get back into the NBA world.
Yeah, based on how that all shakes out in the postseason, it'll be interesting to see how attractive a job Charlotte winds up looking like. You know, obviously has been something of an NBA backwater since the Hornets came back during Kupchak's tenure. 178 and 260 in 6+ seasons, only made the playoffs once, only got over 500 once. And even that was they didn't even make the playoffs. They were the 10th seed and they got drilled by the Hawks in the play-in. So there's not been a significant track record of success there. There was always some question as to how much Kupchak was like, how much he was running his own show and how much that was like executing the vision of ownership. I guess those things don't necessarily have to be mutually exclusive, but are you picking the guy that you think is the best, that gives you the best chance to set up the future? Or is it like the best player of all time comes in and says, you're drafting that guy, because I remember watching him during March Madness? It's hard to tell, you know, and
plenty of stories. Who knows what they're about MJ coming in week of the draft and kind of changing up, dating back to the Rich Show era. So,
yeah. Yeah, that's been going on. And you know, there's all these sliding door sort of moments. You know, 2018 is Kupchak's first draft and they have the number 11 pick and they choose Shai Gilgeous-Alexander with the number 11 pick. And then they flip that pick to the Clippers at number 13 for Miles Bridges. And, you know, who knows? There's a million versions of that kind of story. And, you know, if you take this guy but not that guy, maybe everything shakes out differently. Maybe it doesn't. Maybe organizations are going to rise or fall based on lots of other things too. But whoever comes in now, you come in with LaMelo Ball, Brandon Miller, Mark Williams, a few extra picks from the moving and shaking they were able to set up at this last deadline, and potentially some financial flexibility in a couple of years from now. So that's obviously there's going to be a lot of furniture moving around in there, but I think there's the outline of an attractive job there, but they might get jumped in the line by whatever winds up happening in the playoffs. So
yeah,
TBD.
I don't know. I started talking to people about this back around trade deadline-y times. I think Charlotte might be a more intriguing job than the Wizards job that Michael Winger and co just took over. It sounds like they have like a decade of runway there and there's no real expectation to be competitive anytime soon with the Wizards. So like from a job security standpoint, staying power standpoint, who knows if that's going to end up being the real beneficial position compared to Charlotte. But the starting point of LaMelo, Brandon Miller, Mark Williams, the fact that they recruit some draft capital at this deadline, and I was asking this before the Wizards somehow managed a first round pick from Dallas for Daniel Gafford, which is a whole nother conversation. The Hornets got a first for PJ from Dallas as well. They got first Terry Rozier. They got two firsts for Gordon Hayward. And I think there's plenty of expectation and noise about new practice facility, new arena, very competitive owners who like have kind of been breeding themselves by all accounts to like do this. It's just I think Charlotte has always been kind of talked about as a market that could be boosted. Like it's a pretty nice city with a lot of business coming in and out and lovely weather. So I don't know. I personally am bullish on that situation. I'm basically making a public campaign for Rick Chenault to consider me for GM at this point. So let's move on. Let's move on to a news item that I kind of want to complain about. I'm kind of done with Adam Silver just willy-nilly talking about expansion and maybe this and, ooh, one day, ooh, Las Vegas looks cute. Oh, Mexico City, I like what you're doing with your hair there. Like, it's just enough already. Until expansions, because the next time he talks about it, he might just decide, oh, no, that's way too far in the future. We haven't even had conversations about that yet. It's just, I don't know. He said during something in the mix of the Las Vegas Super Bowl that Vegas is definitely on our list of expansion teams, which, like, we know this already. I'm tired of the will we, won't we back and forth of the NBA and Vegas and other expansion teams. I'm done. I don't want to hear about it until we have an announcement that expansion's coming.
I hear you. I think a couple of things are true. One, you're absolutely right. Every time Adam Silver does like some big public availability, this topic comes up. So it's going to come up. Spoiler alert, at All-Star Weekend when he does his big roundtable, someone's going to ask about it.
And I'm going to put my fingers in my ears and I'm going to go, nah, 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 nah.
So yes, if you are someone like us, where you are living and breathing this stuff and have been for years, like, you know that this is the chapter and verse of it. We're not going to talk, really turn our attention to it until after the next meteorites deal, which, by the way, is coming up. So now the timeline is getting closer, which is why people are asking about it. He said it on the Pat McAfee show. I'm willing to bet that the general fan watching the Pat McAfee show has not been like keeping super close tabs on the expansion conversation. But you're right. This is something like everybody knows when they open up the books on this, it's going to be Seattle. It's going to be Vegas. Those are the two that we've heard so much about. Mexico City, they've done like the test balloon with the Capitanes and regular season games in Mexico. The elevation seems to be really be kicking people's asses, and I don't know that that's something that they really want to go to. And we've heard other cities, right? We've heard Louisville, you've heard Kansas City, you've heard whatever. Like, there've been other teams that have been
Vancouver,
right? I'd run it back with the where the Grizzlies didn't work out. Doesn't mean you shouldn't try that market again, etc. We'll see. I think like the argument here is Vegas is now like. When the discussion about Vegas as an NBA city started, whatever that was, like a decade or longer ago, you didn't yet have the Aces there, the WNBA. You didn't have the Golden Knights for the NHL. You didn't have the Raiders there from the NFL. Like, now there's a proof of concept of, even though it's like whatever, your number 40 media market, you have teams that have like been there and sustained there. The A's, you know, that is a whole cluster, but like, you know, MLB wants to get in there too. Like these like leagues see that as a viable market. And even in spite of its size and even in spite of like the transplant nature of Vegas as a fan community or whatever, and there's money to be made there. So they're going to look at it. I think the interesting thing to me is, our super producer, John Gennaro, who we'll be coming back to shortly, question like why this has been like the host city or the stalking horse or the neutral site for NBA stuff, right? There's, you know, in-season tournaments there. Would you have like summer league there, whatever? Like, why would the NBA or where would the NBA move next? If there's an NBA team in Vegas, what's your next?
Oh, they're not moving summer league. I can guarantee you that. There's no way they're moving that.
But like for the, if you were to say move the in-season tournament, right? If you said like, we have a home team in Vegas, we want to put it someplace else. My first thought was like, oh, I wonder if one of those other, what if one of those other potential expansion cities becomes like the trial balloon or the test run, right?
Yeah.
But then my thought was, if I'm Adam Silver, who has talked about basketball diplomacy and growing the game globally, and I want everything to be European soccer, like there's going to be some sovereign wealth fund that's like, bring it to Dubai or whatever. Like,
for sure.
Your in-season tournament's going to go halfway across the world, but it's going to be some showcase event. I don't know. Maybe that's just me, you know, me being cynical, but I wonder about something like that.
It's a fair question to ask. The NBA expansion will happen. It will be, I think, beneficial overall. There'll be more jobs for everyone, for team people, for hopefully media to cover the teams, for arena workers, for
players.
NBA players. Yeah, the union. So it'll be good. But until we actually, it's just like your parents telling you, oh yeah, we're going to get a dog, but not now, over and over and over again.
And, oh, dude, So when my oldest daughter, I have a 9-year-old and a 6-year-old. When my oldest daughter was, I don't know, like 5, she wanted a phone. And we were like, I don't know, when you get bigger. And she's like, when? And I think we just said, I don't know, like when you're 12, I don't know. We could talk about it when you're 12.
Yeah.
Not a day has gone by since
that.
She's like, when I'm 12. So 3 years from now, I'm going to get my phone, right? And now the younger one is like, oh, well, if she's getting it when she's 12, then I'm on the same plan. And so we're going to go for, I'm like, so that's like a lesson too that I had to learn there. Be careful what you say, because they're, while it often seems like they're not listening, they sometimes they really, really are.
Yeah. My sister doesn't listen to the show. I'm just going to say, if you remotely make a plan with her, oh yeah, I would like to do that in April. April 1st will come around and she'll be like, so when are we doing that thing? So yeah, I hear you. I hear you. Let's make our last news roundup. Pit stop in Disney World, Orlando. The Magic became the third team to retire Shaq's jersey. He sat on a throne and did the thing. Penny Hardaway said he owed his life and his career to him. That was big words from 1 cent. Super producer John Gennaro thinks he deserves some credit for this. So, John, tell the people why your beautiful bald head is a little bit big right now.
Well, I'm not just telling the people. I'm telling you guys. I don't think you guys know this. So, around the start of the NBA season, as a part of the Good Word with Goodwill podcast, Vinny Goodwill had an opportunity to interview Shaq about a Pepsi commercial that Shaq had put together or was a part of. And so I was looking for just questions for Vinny to ask Shaq during this interview when I realized that the Magic had never retired any number except for the number 6, which they did for the 6th man, not like the guy off the bench. It's how they were referring to their fans. It's like when an NFL team does the 12th man thing.
Yes.
So they had only retired the number 6 for quote unquote the fans. And so I put in there for Vinny to ask Shaq, should the Orlando Magic start retiring players' numbers?
Mm.
And you guys probably know this. You've both kind of done like the junket interviews. Most of these players, like you're their 50th interview of the day. They're kind of checked out. They're trying not to get frustrated with you. And Shaq was kind of low energy for the first half of the interview until Vinny asked this question. And Shaq immediately like bolted to life and said, I'm trying to remember this word for word. He said, yes, they should retire player numbers. And it's really important to me that I be the first. And then several months later, the Orlando Magic announced, hey, we're retiring Shaq's number. It's entirely possible that he had been giving that interview, that same answer all day long to anyone who asked it. But I only heard Vinny ask it, and I only heard Shaq's answer to Vinny, and I saw him strike to attention when Vinny asked the question. So I'm going to assume that the Magic heard it as well. And they were like, oh, wait, we should do this if we don't want to piss off the big guy.
The most important thing is that Vinny doesn't get any of the credit. It's all you.
Hey, I came up with the question.
Or maybe the big guy immediately logged off and phoned the DeVos family and said, hey, put my number in your fucking Raptors right now.
I'm going to stick the general on you.
Yeah.
Here's the thing. A, completely agree. This is all credit due to John Gennaro. Number two. So A and then two. Great job, Divine. Yeah. Professional writer. Two. They did it wrong. They retired a design of a uniform that Shaquille O'Neal never wore when he played in Orlando. You look at it was side by side the Orlando pinstriped post, put it up, the Magic blog on their social media. It's the design that they've been wearing since like 2008, 2009, like the Dwight era uniforms.
I was going to say, that's a Hedo Turkoglu ass font to me.
Yeah, this is some real Tobias Harris ass shit. But like they put O'Neal 32 on that. He played in the mid 90s for them. It was the pinstripes. It looked entirely different. It was the black color scheme, the whole bit. And they're like and people were like that he didn't wear, that's not the right thing. Like you're showing footage of him playing and he's not wearing that jersey. And so then people are asked about it. And then the Orlando Sentinel reached out to the Magic and was like, so people are wondering about this. And they said, well, we wanted to have it sort of be formalized for when we retire future numbers. So everyone's looks the same when it hangs up there. bogus, badly done. Retire the uniform the guy played in if you want to retire the number. Like, actually, the Lakers, look at the Lakers. There's many areas in which the Lakers are not model franchises, but this one, it's been changed over time. They put up the number and the way it looks with the one the guy actually wore. If you're all getting off on the start, if you're starting this endeavor of we're going to be a real NBA franchise that retires the numbers of the legends who played for us, do it the right way. This was not the right way. Fix this, please.
I think that's a very impassioned plea. I
can't believe I care about this. I just found out that I care about this, but I actually do care about this.
I like it. What I maybe care about, maybe don't care about, is what happened and what did not happen between the Warriors and the Los Angeles Lakers at the NBA trade deadline, where I had a nice Jonathan Kuminga story ready to go Wednesday morning, and then a bombshell of a report from ESPN came out that the Warriors had made, there was many steps to this. The Warriors contacted the Lakers to the point where Joe Lacob got on the phone with Jeannie Buss, which in NBA parlance, when the owners get on the phone, you know something real is happening, about the Lakers trading LeBron James to the Golden State Warriors. Now, there was a lot of buzz about what the Warriors could have been doing. And I think, and I wrote about this a couple days before the deadline after I followed Golden State for two games in 3 days down in Atlanta, back up here in Brooklyn. And the word has been pretty steady from a lot of people in the Warriors franchise that they've been looking for a real number two for Steph ever since they realized Andrew Wiggins ain't that guy anymore. And Klay Thompson ain't that guy anymore. And Draymond Green, despite playing still excellent ball, having the best shooting stretch of his life, apparently, he's not a number two in terms of like scoring option. So that's why they were looking at Pascal Siakam and why they called DeJounte Murray. 39-year-old LeBron James, while he is great, and while this would be, this would just be ripped out of the 2012 to 2020 era of why don't we just call up the biggest, baddest star possible and pair him with our biggest, baddest star. This is some real Daryl Morey Houston Rockets. I'm just like, I don't blame the Warriors for thinking about it. By all accounts, all these dudes, KD, LeBron, Steph, Kawhi, Joel before getting hurt, are all super hyped to play together in Paris. This seems silly to me. That's where I'm going to start from the top.
Silly in that, like, this is obviously a, like, pipe dream that wasn't actually going to get anywhere, so why are we talking about it?
No. I think there's a... that's a great, great question. Let's just start from the top and saying, I without a doubt believe this is the chance this happens this summer. I think no matter.
Really?
If we want to go back, make a through line of Charlotte, and a lot of what's going to happen this offseason will be dependent on first round, second round, flameouts, and what have you. Like, If Atlanta and what happens with Trey and DeJounte is one of the buzziest, oh, could Trey become available things, that's probably number two behind will LeBron and that player option decide to potentially leave the Lakers, which would be a $51 million decision, and it will be generally very challenging for any team outside of the Philadelphia 76ers, who were also reported in this report to have...
I was going
to
say, yeah, prominently featured in that story, which does not feel like an accident.
Yeah. And look, the Sixers, as we wrote in our post-trade deadline, post-mortem, the pieces left over from this table, how it could set the table for this summer, like, the Sixers are going to be biggest of big game hunting. They're going to be hoping for Paul George not to work out a deal with the Clippers, and they're going to be hoping that LeBron wants to look elsewhere. I just think in the context of Golden State, where Steph is turning 36 some point soon, and all this is through the looking glass of, we don't know how much longer this guy is going to be hitting seven threes in four straight games, because no one's done that in NBA history. That, like, you kind of, sure, LeBron is a hell of an answer to how do we support this guy. But you kind of, like, snap your fingers and really close that window even tighter, because the dude is turning 40. I don't know. No one knows how long he's going to. Could he be doing this till 57? Maybe. Will I look like an idiot saying this right now if that happens? Of course. It's going to cost a lot to trade for him. Like, let's just take the toothpaste is already out of the tube. Like, the fact this got written, like, you're not trading for LeBron at that salary without putting Andrew Wiggins and Jonathan Kuminga on the table, where Jonathan Kuminga, again, I'm not saying that that is what happened here, because clearly the talks never got past, like, the does LeBron even want this stage?
Yeah, we weren't talking about, like, structures and packages yet.
Exactly. But, like, mathing, that's how it would have had to have happened. And then there's picks out the door, too, and what have you. And, like, I don't know, man. I just am, count me as a massive skeptic that if you have one shot, and when you're thinking of, like, oh, Pascal Siakam isn't necessarily worth it because we don't know if the fit and, like, paying for him at 5 years, whatever, is going to be worth it. Like, is just hemorrhaging all of your depth to come out with a team that's Steph, LeBron, a very depleted Clay, Draymond, and Pods, like, is that really, like, we're supposed to be moving past the Warriors trading Jordan Poole to get Chris Paul's expiring / non-guaranteed deal, plus the fit for him to be able to uphold bench lineups when Steph goes to the bench, but, like, also the massive financial ramifications that came with that. If that was supposed to be the, like, signaling that everyone but Phoenix is daunted by the new tax implications and what have you, and building super teams are just not possible anymore, like, why would you then think about this? It's kind of, I understand it's LeBron, but, like, my gut reaction, especially, like, I had heard after the deadline from several teams, Golden State included, that, like, oh, we're kind of thinking that LeBron might be available this summer. My thought this entire time, and prove me wrong, Dan, unless you agree with me, has just been like, why?
So I understand the skepticism about it. That my immediate, well, I mean, I maybe was even a little more cynical when I first saw the news from Woj and Ramona Shelburne, where I'm just thinking, like, oh, the Warriors are on ESPN tonight. They need something to be able to talk about in the run-up to the broadcast and to program through their shows during the day. And also, this is then something for everyone to be asked about at All-Star Weekend, and it becomes shoulder content for the next, you know, week.
Yeah,
and a half.
I'm not questioning the validity of the reporting or why it made a ton of sense from a programming standpoint at all, because clearly we're talking about it right here.
Yeah, my first thought was that. My second thought was, like, yeah, if this is, you know, how structurally would that work? Our guy Ben Rohrbeck wrote about it yesterday, and his question was, like, would it have to be Clay going out? Would you do, you know, obviously there's been so much, you know, stress and storm about Clay this season and his expiring contract and what the future holds there and whatever. My guess was that it would be like a Poole, Wiggins, Kuminga type situation. That would probably be what they would. Sorry, Chris Paul, rather, not Poole. Chris Paul, Wiggins, Kuminga, like, that's how the structure would work out. The question about, like, why would the Warriors kind of flip it? Like, they've kind of, yes, the environment has changed, but there's always been sort of a laddering of the contracts there, right? Like, okay, KD doesn't want to be there anymore. All right, so we sign and trade KD and turn that into D'Angelo Russell. D'Angelo Russell isn't working out, so we turn that into Wiggins. It's about keeping the salary slots and, like, the availability. You're going to be over the cap with what you're paying for your main stars anyway, so how can you turn that into more talent that's projectable moving forward? So from that perspective, like, even if it costs you the luxury tax hell, turning that into LeBron at a whatever gigantic number, then eventually, theoretically, LeBron comes off the books and then you still have that asset or that space to play with, whatever. I can kind of see it from that perspective. Also, with all due respect to all the other names you were talking about who might make sense and might not make sense as the number two, like Pascal Siakam is not LeBron James, even
for
at 39.
Sure.
Right.
For
so,
sure.
Like, so the idea of like you do your due diligence and check in because that could theoretically take you into a different stratosphere for your competitive team, right? So my skepticism and my cynicism and whatever about how real this is then led to, I guess, a second cynical thought, which is, yeah, remember when it was 2017 and LeBron was making the finals, but it looked like they'd kind of hit a wall up against those KD Warriors. And all, like, you started to hear, like, I don't know, maybe like LA, and everyone was like, nah. But then a year later, that's what happened. And so my second thought was, is this the beginning of the off-ramp? Is this like the setting of the table? You combine this with all the reporting about the 76ers continuing to keep their avenues open and plan to have max cap space and potentially as much as like $64 million if they line the money up right, with all their expirings coming off, Maxi still on the cap hold for restricted free agency or for his extension eligibility. And it's basically just Embiid. And if they make the second round or if they get past the second round, B-ball Paul. That's like all that's on the all the books for them next year. So like there's a pathway there. There's a boogeyman. There's a cap space boogeyman sitting there in Philly. And you have the recent reporting about sort of tete-a-tete, the conference with Clutch and Rich Paul and former compatriot at CAA, the guy who sort of brought him up before he went out on his own, Leon Rose, now the president of the Knicks, the potential thawing of the icy relationship between the Knicks and Clutch. Why would that happen now? Probably a million reasons, but hey, this could be one of them. And so that you sort of start adding all these things up and thinking about...
And the fact the Lakers are not very good.
And the Lakers are not very good. And outside of the one season where they won the championship, which is a pretty big... exception, they've been middling for most of this tenure that LeBron's been there, even since they got AD, right? And so there's this, like, LeBron teams have a shelf life and a life cycle, and this, it would not be out of the realm of possibility for the Lakers to be reaching the end of that and for him to then look and say, well, where are the avenues for continued title contention? Who's got resources? Who's got opportunities? Who's got people I want to play with? And maybe there are a few of those. So that would run counter to all of the previous reporting that, like, LeBron's business is set up in LA, his family is set up in LA. He has been adamant, like, this is where I want it to end. But maybe that mind changes. Who knows? You know, if nothing else, an agent like Rich Paul and a player like LeBron James do not leave themselves without avenues and without options.
For sure.
And so maybe this is the beginning of creating those.
Yeah. Last thing before we shift to that portion, because that is definitely, like we said at the top, that is definitely a thing. People around the NBA are not dismissing the idea that LeBron could be available, whether that's picking up the player option and requesting a trade to this place or declining it and doing whatever. So I just to bring it back to the Warriors stuff, I just want to be clear that, like, my thought of just LeBron being the number two that they're looking for, which again, they're looking for a number two for Steph. They were looking for it at the trade deadline. There wasn't one. You know, they talked about Kelly Olynyk with Utah. That's not the number two option. They talked about Alex Caruso with Chicago.
You might need to frame it as like a partner or like a co-leader. Like the idea of someone presenting LeBron James as the number two is going to make, I don't know, like a large swath of humanity start, you know, rending their garments.
But that's what they're looking for. They're looking for a second banana to Steph Curry, a co-pilot, to use your preferred pilot. So my skepticism goes back to the fact that the Lakers are dealing with this problem right now, that there is very little depth behind LeBron and AD. And I think that will be a continued challenge. But maybe the thinking, it just goes, you put LeBron and Steph together and fuck it. Like, that's just going to be a supernova anyway. So, but with the Lakers, like, if they I mean, both these teams right now, they're 9-10 in the play-in picture. They're in the TM play-in push. They're not guaranteed to make the playoffs at all.
No.
This will be really funny now that if they play each other in the 9-10 game, that'll be added stakes for that with the whole LeBron, will he, you know, and the Golden State and the Steph and whatever. So yeah. Let's, for our entertainment's sake, let's root for that matchup. But yeah, that's also why Golden State is thinking so creatively and dreaming big, because they're even more mediocre than the Lakers right now. So, yeah, would it be the Knicks? Would it be Philly? Would he go back to Cleveland, where, I don't know, there's been all this smoke? I saw some anonymous executive told Howard Beck that Donovan Mitchell is definitely leaving Cleveland once that contract's up, which, there's no way to know that, but everyone speaks about that as a definitive thing as well. Could there be some Donovan LeBron trade? I don't know. We're just spitballing here. I think there will be a massive sweepstakes if this does happen, even though I'm skeptical of the 39-year-old guy continuing to do this. But I was skeptical that the Lakers would make the Western Conference Finals too. So I'm willing to eat my words, but I think a lot of people will line up. Is there, I don't know, this is, to not get too into the ridiculous, is there a spot that you want him to potentially go to if he were to flee?
I mean, just for the intrigue of it, having LeBron James join the 76ers after the decade plus of insanity that the Sixers have been through, and all the different iterations and leaders and personalities and, you know, power brokers that have come in and been through, and the different versions of it, they've that the potential there is mind blowing to me. So there, I think just from a, we root for stories, that one I think would be really, really interesting. But yeah, you're absolutely right. 39 or 40 or 50 or 70, if LeBron James says he wants to come to your team, you got to have a long, hard conversation about it and a hell of a lot of meetings and think about it. So even if that means, as you said, would a team have to sort of strip itself down to the studs to fit him alongside its existing stars? If the Sixers are just Embiid, Maxi, LeBron, and then you figure out what else around it, that's still a pretty decent starting point. There are worse places to try to build something. And if the Knicks, if it's a sign and trade where you move out Randall plus, whatever guys, young guys that the Lakers want or whatever, there are worse places to start. I don't know. These are all interesting theoreticals. And I think this is what happens. A butterfly flaps its wings and, halfway across the world. And then everybody else feels the tornado, 2 weeks later. LeBron arches his eyebrow at somebody and the entire league feels the ramifications.
He tweets an emoji and it all the sand and the hourglasses.
The whole league scurries, right? The markets move, right? Yeah.
He did give, I remember being at Summer League in 2018 in some dark back room of the Thomas and Mack Center where the Sixers graciously invited myself and several other media members to have an off the record chat with Josh Harris and Brett Brown, which we were then able to use after the moratorium was over, and they flew to LA to meet with LeBron before he went. That was the one team that he met with besides the Lakers. So there's at least, but that was back when Ben Simmons was also a clutch client and Ben Simmons was still a belle of the ball and working out with LeBron in the offseason and had next. So a little bit different circumstances.
Yeah, that's owners and GMs and coaches and generations of teams ago. So yeah, a lot can change, but a lot can change in the space of the next couple of weeks. Everyone will be talking about this in Indianapolis. Everyone will be asked about this in Indianapolis. LeBron will probably be asked about this in Indianapolis. And as we have seen, he's not averse to setting the agenda when he wants to.
Yeah.
So what he says about all of this, could be awfully interesting and instructive.
The last All-Star game I went to, Cleveland 2022. Yeah. Where LeBron pulled Jason Lloyd aside and started flirting with the Cavs again. So yeah, Who's to say what could happen? Who's to say what could happen after we take a quick break here on No Cap Room? All-Star Weekend is this weekend, even though you and I are not going to be there. I'm not going to watch Friday or Saturday because they're very easy to recap on YouTube. I'm going to watch Sunday night. I'm going to watch Sunday night, I promise you. My old roommate, shout out Hatem, he's coming back and we're going to tune in. But I am excited at the general concept that an all-star, one Jaylen Brown, is doing the dunk contest. It's just, I mean, the fact that we have, and no disrespect to Jacob Toppin or Mac McClung, but the fact that we have two G League guys, and Jacob Toppin's on a two-way, so don't want to be disrespectful, but the majority of his NBA career has come for the Westchester Knicks and not the New York Knicks. I don't even know the fourth guy off the top of my mind.
Jaime Jaquez, your doppelganger.
There we go. Jaime's going to do good. Jaime's going to do good. He's going to surprise some people. But I think it is like good for the sport, good for the culture that a legitimate all-star is competing in this for the first time in I don't know how long. I think Donovan Mitchell is the last champion that's like somewhat of real consequence. But
yes, but that was before he... I think it was before he became an all-star. Yes, we have for years been like, can we please get household names into this competition? Can we please get, you know, true stars into this contest? And for years, we've kind of heard like, there's not really much upside for them to doing it. Like, because if you win, all right, cool. And if you lose, well, that was embarrassing and that's going to live on tape forever. So shouts out to Jaylen Brown for, you know, stepping into that and saying he's willing to do it. There is the conspiracy minded part of me that's like, well, you can just sort of hand him his trophy now, because if the whole point of this is to get more stars willing to do it, like unless he misses every dunk, like how do you not give it to the all-star? But maybe the sheer wattage of what like Mac McClung brings in his return
is back.
Yeah, I'm sure the dunks are going to be dope. I just like the thing that drives me nuts about it is like there's so much artistry that goes into it, and there's so much like specific talent development to do it really well that it doesn't necessarily always align with like players being really good players. And so you can be really great at this thing but not great at the other thing. Mm-hmm. And so I don't know, like separate skill sets, but. I know you recently spoke to but you spoke to a slam dunk champion not too long ago.
Yeah, it was actually almost 2 months to the date. So not so recently, but Glenn Robinson III. Yeah. We sat down in Orlando. If you're a diehard listener, you're a trusty steed of the NC Armada, you read every article I produce at Yahoo Sports, you'll remember I had a nice article with the lovely Glenn Robinson III about his effort to get back into the NBA while with the Wisconsin Herd, wearing the number of his father, Glenn Big Dog Robinson. Glenn Robinson III won in 2017 when he was with the Indiana Pacers. Shout out to the 2024 city host. He told me, to your exact point, Dan, why guys won't do it. This is a direct quote. Quote, "It's the hardest competition of the night. It is embarrassing if you miss a dunk. You're expected to miss in the three-point contest." I quote, "I can't imagine if LeBron's going out there and losing what people will be saying on social media. It's the toughest competition. You're out there on your own and you have to perform. It's very hard to go out there and perform and complete your first dunks on first try because you're just standing around in this gym. You don't really have like a warm-up. It's very awkward and clunky and not organic." So I then asked him for advice for the Jaylen Browns of the world. And by that, plural, I mean, let's get more all-stars coming, baby. Let's have more Jaylen Browns. Glenn said, there's a lot of recycled dunks and repeated dunks. It's getting to the point where what else can you think of? So he recognizes that challenge. But his best advice is to do your best dunk first, which I thought is really interesting because on the broadcast, I'm so like familiar with Kenny Smith going like, he should have saved that. You don't do that. You know what I'm saying? Like their whole discourse and dialogue about what you should and shouldn't do. Glenn's just saying, bam, bring it out, because you set the tone. It tenses everybody else up. I was able to do that, Glenn said. And then Aaron Gordon missed his dunk. Derek Jones Jr. missed his dunk. DeAndre Jordan made his, but it wasn't as effective as getting 50. I woke everybody up. I shocked them. So Glenn Robinson III, given the advice, and I agree. I remember he brought out a guy from the dance team who could dunk, and the mascot, he was jumping over people and what have you. So shout out GR3. Someone give that man a 10-day. And maybe he'll be eligible for the dunk contest too.
Yeah, if he, I mean, maybe we need like a professional wrestling style run in, like if like former champions returning and deciding they're going to claim their belt. The idea of don't leave your best dunk in the chamber, and then like if something goes wrong, then you don't ever get to do it. Like that makes a lot of sense. One I'll always remember. I remember fondly because I really liked this player, and he didn't stick around. James Flight White, who was briefly with the Knicks. And he competed in All-Star Weekend because he was like one of venerated around the world as a contest dunker.
His nickname was Flight.
Yep. One competition's all over the world. And then it was like he's finally doing the NBA contest. And he was trying to do, I think, a through the legs, like an East Bay from the free throw line. And which is cool as hell. And he had made that kind of dunk before. But he runs the full length of the court and he missed the first try.
Yeah.
And then he had to run all the way back down to the baseline again.
It's really deflating.
To keep running. And so like, yeah. And also exhausting, right? Like you are sprinting to, cause you only have so many opportunities to make the dunk and so much time on the clock or whatever. And so you're sprinting back and forth and it's just like, everyone was so amped for it. And then it's like, and you're like, it's the opposite of I woke everybody up. It's that feeling of like, I put them to sleep or I made them sort of a little bit worried.
I made them hot cup of bedtime tea.
Yes, exactly right. Sleepy. This is like the sleepy time jam. Yeah. Not that anybody asked me for my advice, like Glenn Robinson III, because I am not a slam dunk champion, but also make it one you can make. because if you miss it six times, I think that sets a bad tone.
That makes me think of Chris Birdman Robinson Anderson. Chris Birdman Anderson.
Yep. Shouts out to the Birdman, fly in any weather.
And not flying well in the dunk contest. Steph versus Sabrina, new event for the NBA and the WNBA. You know, trying to always market the women's game as much as they can. And this should bring a lot of eyeballs onto Sabrina and the rest of the W. I hope that it is a steep competition in the wake of the Taylor Swiftification of the NFL. Don't need the trolls to have an opportunity if Steph just comes out and waxes Sabrina. I'm not saying that's what I think is going to happen. She's a phenomenal shooter. Shout out to the best team that plays in Barclays Center, the New York Liberty. But yeah, I think it would be... I had a lunch with a NYU grad student who was seeking career counsel in general sports stuff sometime in the last 3 or 4 months, whenever it was. And he said to me, I've run a really interesting study that shows the traffic, the interest in the WNBA is much below what I was like, buddy, that's not, you shouldn't be the one trying to make that your claim to fame here. I think we only need positive reinforcement to flip over to ESPN and ESPN2 in July through August. I plan to make a trip out to Phoenix to check out the Mercury, and with an invitation from Nick Uren, their new GM, former Golden State Warriors exec. So, I'm hoping that this event works out well, because there's plenty of things and plenty of ideas the NBA comes up with that falls flat on their face. I'm hoping this is not one of them.
I mean, if nothing else, it's a way to highlight two super famous people, and you know, like Sabrina Ionescu, like her shoe is like, you know, and I don't know a ton about the sneaker game, but like I know there's a lot of dudes wearing the Sabrina ones. I know that they are a popular shoe, not just here in New York but abroad. And so highlighting that personality, highlighting, and as you said, I think it was like 37 out of 40 in this the 3-point contest that she was in at All-Star Weekend, WNBA All-Star Weekend. So, you know, the potential for a can you top this to highlight the skills of the women's game, like I think it could be really cool that you've got she's shooting WNBA balls from the WNBA line. Steph is shooting NBA balls from the NBA line. Like, it's not fully across the board. Might, maybe it would be cool if
this isn't a Billie Jean King situation.
Yeah, it's not like a catch weight fight where, you know, like you're finding the, you know, the middle ground between the two. But I don't know. It could be like the part where it's when somebody just hits like nine shots in a row, everyone gets excited about that. So no matter who's the one doing the shooting and, you know, which size of ball or line they are shooting from, it should be pretty rad. And it's more about the personalities than anything else. My concern is mostly about like, is there going to be a comedy bit inserted in the middle of it where like Kevin Hart starts shooting balls again? I don't know.
I hope not.
I don't know if we need that in the middle of it, but
I hope not.
Well, no, we'll
I
see.
Will say the difference between a men's ball and a women's ball is just 1 ounce, 29.5 versus 28.5. It is still a crazy difference. I remember in college when I played pickup a few times with the women's team, they would have us have, you know, like the women's scrimmage team. It was basically like the guys who played pickup all the time at the gym. One day the women would come in the off season and they'd just be like, who wants to play us? And we had to play with their ball. It was so much different.
Right.
It's just, it's crazy what an ounce does, but neither here nor there. So the last thing I want to say is that I'm very disappointed that Elam Ending is gone. In the spirit of loving pickup and all these guys talk about how much they love playing pickup with other guys in the summer. I got the UCLA runs of Rico Hines. You've got Chris Brickley's stuff here at Lifetime Fitness or whatever the place is called over on the West Side, Sky Gym, whatever it is. Like the Elam Ending, I thought, brought the closest combination of what that is to an NBA floor. And it gave us some moments with LeBron's game winner and Cleveland and whatnot. It is terrible when it ends on a free throw, but I like the Elam Ending. I think something that makes it different. I like the draft. I wish they did it better. I wish that instead of going away, they had everyone out on the floor and they just picked teams really, really pickup style right before, and everyone had reversible jerseys and just did it. So I'm disappointed that we are back to the East versus West. There is no Elam Ending. That is my take. But I will watch, as I said. I will reunite with former roommate Hatem, diehard Minnesota Timberwolves fan, so he's in a good mood these days. And Minnesota legend Amir Coffey is just bringing it and starting for the Clippers. So Hatem's in really good spirits these days. And I'm excited for our rekindling of friendship while watching Sunday night. But I am going to be mourning the loss of the Elam Ending as well.
Okay. All of the tweaks to the All-Star game have not really made much of a dent in my interest level in it. Super producer John Gennaro mentioned, like, before we started doing the show for real, we did test episodes. Like, we just like practice runs and see how the show would work. And one of them was ahead of last All-Star weekend. And I had forgotten my take, and John shared it with me. And I think it's a good take, so I'm going to recycle it since you guys didn't hear it the first time around, which was that a friend of mine is a film professor at Providence College. And he, I remember I would talk to him a fair amount about like the films of David Lynch. And I would say, I always feel a little bit like I don't understand what I just watched. Like I appreciate the artistry of it. I appreciate the feeling of it, but like, I feel like I don't understand it. And his thing was like, it's not about what the intellectual understanding of it. It's about the impressionistic stuff, what it makes you feel. And All-Star has to be about like the vibes, right? It's got to be about the feeling of it. And if there's no competition level and there's no, it's all about gimmicks and other stuff, eventually people just don't feel anything. Yeah, cool. Mm-hmm. It's 200 to 187 or one, whatever.
But the winner of each quarter gets $50,000 for charity.
And that's great. Charity is a cool thing and we should support charities. And the NBA as a multi-billion dollar multinational corporation should support more charity. It's great. Absolutely. But the premise of we're going to go back to basketball and trying to showcase good, like that basketball is a pretty cool sport when it's played at a high level by people who care about it. I think it's worth a shot. How that dovetails with, and they're going to be playing it on a huge LED court that's like glass. I don't know exactly how you know, where it's about the purity of the hardwood, yeah, but actually the purity of the LED light up screen. So we're going to make it look like the guys are falling into Mordor or whatever. I don't know. We'll see how it all works out. But in general, put the best players in the world on a court together and let them try to do cool stuff. Yeah, like that, something good can come of that. And like, yeah, me and you and people like us that have to watch a ton of this for our jobs and that do it constantly, and they're sort of, it's like a constant thing. Like, we're not the target audience. The target audience is whoever will also be drawn in by their favorite streamer
and YouTuber.
It's kids
waiting to get their phone when they turn 12.
That's exactly right. But like, I'm looking at the list of people who are going to be in the celebrity game, and it's like, this is the most popular streamer. This YouTuber has 5 million followers.
Sir is in the game, and Sir is truly one of my favorites. Shout out Chasing Summer, one of my favorite albums of all time.
Yeah, I like calling people Sir. And his like, name so is Sir. It's, yes, I'm familiar. But like, the people they are trying to draw in are not like people who are going to be signing up to watch Hornets Wizards on a Wednesday, right? It's like, this is it, who can you grab and then turn into the next 25, 30 years of fans? And so like, if the gimmicks do that, then great. If just showcasing great basketball does that, great. I don't know. We'll see. And then in the meantime, I guess we'll find out if someone's going to stream a prank. I don't know.
Well, if it is any saving grace, noted defensive tactician and true valuer of great shot profiles, Chris Finch is manning the Western Conference sidelines. So he's going to make sure that there's no long twos and that everyone's in drop and covering the weak side and tagging the roll man, and things will be great.
Also, the one thing we haven't said, there's the Saturday night, the skills challenge. Victor Wembanyama is going to be in the skills challenge. Watching a 7'4" guy doing all the dribbling and stuff, like, all right, that's fine. Like, that's, I don't know exactly how the format works. Oh, and then the with the Rising Stars challenge, like, Detlef Schrempf is coaching the G League team. So if you like Detlef Schrempf, that's good news. Pau has got the number one pick and has Wembanyama, so that's pretty cool. I don't know. We'll see. I wonder if Paolo Banchero is going to be like, I want to actually win this, or if he's just sort of like, I am an all-star, I shouldn't be here. So
It'll be fun.
Much to be excited about.
We had fun today. That's all we've got for you on this episode of No Cap Room. Thanks to super producer John Gennaro for doing all the things he does to make the show look and sound great, and for maybe sparking Shaquille O'Neal's jersey retirement ceremony in Orlando. Please subscribe to Ball Don't Lie on YouTube or whatever podcast platform you're currently listening on, and leave us a 5-star review, because you never know when we're going to impact NBA history, like John Gennaro potentially creating a jersey retirement. We thank you for listening, and we appreciate it. If you came back again next week for another episode, No Cap Room.